The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Hey, coming to your cordless, everybody. It's Thursday night, January 18th, 2024. It's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and here in Ilhan Omar's Condestral District, in Minneapolis. It's 2 minutes after 10 p.m. Central Time. I'm Jim Peters, and look at that. My God, we're only 2 minutes into this, and one of my lights went out. Yeah, there's timing. That's par for the course. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to Jim Peters at Night. This is episode 74, if I'm correct. So, tonight, we got a big show for you tonight. Stan Gordon, iconic UFO and Bigfoot researcher, he's joining us. He's here. We taped this afternoon. Fascinating discussion. I hope you guys will like this. And I got some thoughts on that in a few minutes. So, our sponsor, Conk News, CONK.com, at Conk.com, the best single news aggregator on the web, period. Check it out. Before we go to the interview, we're going to check out their front page in real time, so we'll do that. You got that. So tonight, Stan Gordon. Next week, you know, we don't do Fridays here because I'm old and lazy. Next week, well, first of all, we're taking next Monday off. I got to go see my mother. And I know it sounds stupid, but the thing is, when the weather's this bad right now, here in Minneapolis, it's 5 degrees. Fuck you in Florida. It's what I got to say. I went to school in Miami. Why did I leave? What was I thinking? It's 5 degrees out. I'm going to go see my mother. I got to drive through southern Minnesota. It's an all-day affair. So we don't have a guest booked for Monday, so I'm taking Monday off. So, okay, so no show on Monday. Tuesday, Ed Morrissey, editor-in-chief of HotAir.com, he's the third person from Hot Air we're having on the show, and the fourth person from the Salem Media Properties, or more what are more commonly called townhall.com properties. He's going to join us for the first time, never been on before. So we're looking forward to talking to him. Wednesday, Albert Rosales. Albert's written 15 books on the subject of humanoid creatures. Now, these are not just, you know, we're not talking about just gray aliens here. We're talking about Bigfoot. We're talking about ghosts. We're talking about anything that appears kind of that walks on 2 feet upright and kind of looks like a human but isn't. That's what we're talking about. He's written 15 books on this. The latest, they're all done basically chronologically. And the latest one is reports he's gotten from 2000 to 2015. He says it's the last one he's going to write. He's not going to do anymore. I'm reading it. It's fascinating. Weird shit. That's what it is. It's weird shit. And we're going to talk to Stan about some weird shit in a few minutes, too. It's like, my God, you know, what is going on? And the thing is, I don't mean like lately. I mean, you know, I've always said this, and I don't know why I think this, that is, I have this strange feeling there's something in our universe that us humans are completely unaware of, that's running around in our space or in our heads or something, and we don't have a clue. We don't even know it exists. I don't know why I think this. I've always thought this, and I'm starting to think there's more and more scientific evidence that maybe there's something to that. Anyway, Albert Rosales on Wednesday. Thursday, Mark Mercell. He was voted Bigfoot Hunter of the Year by the Bigfoot Times magazine newspaper. So we're looking for a talk on him. And so, all right, so we're going to talk to Stan here in a few minutes. Stan, as I mentioned at the top of this interview, he's like the only person I really know that studies UFOs and Bigfoot more or less equally. He's into both. Usually it's one or the other. We've had panel discussions on here. Larry Newman, he's a Bigfoot investigator. He comes on a regular basis. So we talk to these people regularly. But he's the only one I know that does Bigfoot and UFOs together. So I we're not going to do any politics tonight because it's a long interview. It's good. And the thing is, I have one piece of news here that you're going to know about, and that is, and this was, I'm pulling this out of Fox News on Tuesday, and last, I think Jazz Shaw was on last Thursday, if I'm right. So, we talked about, I didn't actually get, but was able to track down exactly what day this is, but I think it was last Wednesday, but I'm not really sure. There was a classified closed-door meeting about the UAP thing for congressional leaders, for people, members of Congress. People walked out of there with all sorts of different opinions. Tim Burchett, the guy, the congressman from South Dakota, has pretty much been leading this thing, this whole UFO charge thing. He said he was disappointed. Some people said they weren't. Matter of fact, he first said he was disappointed, and then he ended up agreeing with another congressman who said, it's the first meeting they've had that, quote-unquote, moved the ball forward. In other words, they actually seem to learn something. Now, the problem with Congress here, the problem Congress has, is that other people, and David Grush told them this formally in a congressional committee setting, under oath, that they are not being informed about what's going on. And so David Pergram, chief political, and this is actually really interesting, he's the chief political writer for FoxNews.com. And as I've said before, the thing that fascinates me about this is how this interfaces with American politics. You wouldn't think UFOs would, but they do. Because the reason is because everyone pretty much agrees now that some secret is being kept by members of the government. But the thing is, so that's the question, members of the government. Pergram brought up in this article, there are people in Congress who think that it's what they call silos of the government. And then, in other words, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. You know, like Grush said, he says he has evidentiary proof that we have these crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. And yet, if you ask anybody in government whether we do, they say no. And they're starting to think now, as I am too, that people in government aren't lying. They just don't know. They literally don't know about this. So you have people in government who are keeping things secret from other committees and other divisions of the government. Right? Okay? Right. But the thing is, what came out in this meeting, and people were talking about this very carefully, and Jazz Shaw, if you go back and listen to our interview, Jazz brought this up too. He said, you have to listen very carefully to what David Grush has said. And David Grush said, we have spacecraft created by non-human intelligence. Now, somebody pointed out, he didn't say extraterrestrial. He didn't. And apparently in this meeting, this also came up. Are these extraterrestrial? And he refused to answer the question. And so, Stan Gordon is going to talk about this in a few minutes too. He says that he's been studying this for 60 years. The guy's in his early 70s now. His claim to fame, which he will discuss at the very beginning of this interview because it's very important, is that he was actually in Kettysburg when the Kettysburg UFO incident happened on December 9th, 1965. He was 16 years old. He grew up in the town one over, about 12, 13 miles away, Greensburg. He still lives in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, believe it or not. He still lives there. So he knows this area intimately, and he will bring up in the interview several times. He said the real important thing here, which he said you can't do via audio, and unfortunately, this is an audio-only interview. We did it on the phone. We couldn't use a camera. So you get to look at my stupid face as I react, but you don't get to see him. He said you actually have to see the landing site because it's very isolated compared to the rest of the community. It's hard to see and hard to find. But anyway, he says he's been doing this for 60 years, And the more he's into it, and also the Bigfoot thing, the more he gets into it, he said the whole thing doesn't make any sense at all. And it's kind of true. Now, I have a friend of mine who might be watching this. I don't know. He watches this show regularly, and he's going to laugh and laugh when I bring this up. But he's constantly teasing me about the fact he saw this one thing on a Bigfoot show on the Travel Channel where somebody said, well, you know, experts agree that Bigfoot can change planes, you know. You know, we laugh and laugh and laugh. But the thing is, you know, Stan says there's something going on here other than the fact that these are regular primates that have been, quote-unquote, undiscovered. And that actually makes sense. I mean, it makes sense that they're regular primates undiscovered, but it also makes sense if you stop and think about that. We've never caught one. We've never caught one. We've never found a carcass, and we've never found a skeleton. No, it's never been discovered, ever. And Stan talks about the fact, and I brought this up too in the interview, that I've heard of a lot of people who said they have seen Bigfoot disappear right in front of their eyes. And he says he has a slew of reports of this, of people, and he names, he gives out places, names, the whole bit about what was going on. And people who said, the one woman who shot at a Bigfoot said it literally disappeared. She said it was like an old flash bulb from a camera went off. She said there was a huge puff of bright light and the thing was gone right in front of her eyes. You know, so the reason I'm bringing this up is because, well, this is what came out of this hearing, is that, you know, somebody asked Grush during the hearing, during this classified hearing, are we talking about interdimensional stuff? And although apparently that question wasn't answered directly, that seems to be the implication. It was like, yeah, and nobody even understands this. Nobody ever understands what interdimensionality is. You know, we're humans. We live in four dimensions: height, width, depth, and time and space. Time is the fourth dimension. So if there's dimension above this, if there's a fifth and sixth dimension, and string theory says there's 11 dimensions in our universe, not in the universe, in our universe, that there's 11 dimensions and we can only perceive four of them. I mean, we're kind of screwed. We're talking about literally something, not just something humans aren't aware of, but we'll never be aware of it, ever. We can build machines to discern this stuff, but we will never discern it. It's frightening. If you stop and think about it, I mean, it's terribly frightening. And so the other thing Stan will talk about in a few minutes too, you'll hear, he talks about the balls of light that everybody, and I put this in the show description tonight, everybody sees them everywhere. They're anywhere from, well, he said they're anywhere from the size of fireflies. I'm not even going to go there, because maybe they are fireflies. They're anywhere from golf ball size to tennis ball size to basketball size, and occasionally they're about the size of a beach ball. Apparently, they're occasionally that big, but they generally don't get above the size of a basketball, and they're floating around all over the place. I told him a story, which you'll hear in the interview in a second, about there's this report of this woman. She's living in a major city, and I can't remember where, and she's in an office building. She goes down to the parking lot to her car, and she says she's walking through the parking lot, and there, floating in the parking lot, is a metallic ball about the size of a basketball. It's about 4 feet off the ground. It's basically at her head height, at her eye height, and it's floating around, and she said it was very obviously under intelligent control. It was looking around. Well, I mean, so, you know, and, you know, she said this, and other people said this before. It's not so much that this is scary. It's just plain fucking weird. And it is weird, you know. And then, Stan talked about it. Of course, I had heard about this too, about the people who literally encounter these things in their homes. It's like, you know, a woman said she got out of the shower. She just pulled the curtain out, and there's this pink ball staring at her, just floating off the floor. It's not a balloon. You know, it seems to be metallic. What the hell? I don't know. And apparently Congress doesn't know either. So this is the thing. Are we going to find anything out? You know, I'm going to cut to the chase. Stan says at the end of the interview, he doesn't think we will. I can admit, I will be surprised if anything definitive comes out before I die. But I said that about the Fed, just this disclosure thing, too, that happened in 2017, and all of a sudden, UFOs are a serious subject. And they 6 years ago, people would be laughing at you. If we, you know, there was no congressional report on UFOs in 50 years until we had one in 2021. So, who knows? Who knows? So, let's check out the front page of Conk News here. Let's check this out. Hold on a second. I can do this. Watch me run this. Okay, so what do we got? Joy Reid and the GOP, racist again. Yeah, of course they are. You know, core education at George Mason University, just societies. This is in real time. This is, if you go to conk.com right now, you'll see the same thing. Now, the front page of Conk News changes every 3 hours. They have 75 different news sources that they get news from that are piped into here. All of these headlines are original from the source. All the pictures are original from the source. If you click through, like for example, well, I can tell here, you can't see my cursor, and this is my terrible thing. I'm running it all over the place. At the little logo at the bottom of the top of the left-hand column, I think that's National Review. So you can see where the sources are from. And also, actually, if you click on the little logos, it'll take you to the front page of those publications. So, at any rate, you can't, if you're a news junkie, you can't find a better news source than this, period. I solidly suggest you check this out at conk.com. So, without further ado, I'll have some parting some parting words at the end. But here's Stan Gordon from this afternoon. Joining us from home via phone in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, it's UFO investigator extraordinaire Stan Gordon. Hi, Stan.
Good evening. Good talking to you.
I can't tell you how much I got to thank you for doing this. It's like, you know, we had to plan this like 4 months ahead of time. It was well worth the trouble. So, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say thank you for having me on your program.
It's my pleasure. Totally my pleasure. So, you know, the first thing is, I talked to a lot of UFO people and I talked to a lot of Bigfoot researchers, but I think you're the only person I've talked to thus far who does both more or less equally. And I want to kind of get into how you got into the Bigfoot thing, because it's, you know, I think the public kind of knows how you got into the UFO thing. But let's go back to that from the very beginning there. You live in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, correct?
That is correct.
And that's about, is it the town over from Kecksburg? What is it?
We're about 12 miles from Kecksburg, about 30-some miles east of Pittsburgh.
And you grew up in Greensburg, right?
That is correct.
All right, so take us back to December 1965. What were you, 17 years old?
I was 16 years old, actually.
16. So, okay, just you go ahead. Like, what happened?
Oh, boy, well, you need several days to tell you the whole story.
I know.
It was an interesting evening, I can tell you. It was December 9th, 1965. I was 16. I was already interested in UFOs. I started my interest when I was 10 years old. And I was tuned into KDK Radio in Pittsburgh, the major radio station, and it was a talk radio show. Just to make the story short, almost the entire radio show that night was focusing on this breaking news story that was coming across the wires, and the calls coming into radio and TV and news and police departments all over the Pittsburgh area. But the reports are coming in that this brilliant object was seen from Ontario, Canada, over Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And at 4:47 p.m., an object came in over the greater Pittsburgh area, and it was seen by multitudes of people, and there's a lot we did not know at that time. I began to document the information as breaking on the news, and the next day I tried to follow up on it, but there wasn't a lot of names or information in the paper, but over many weeks and months and years, I tracked down hundreds of people who were involved, and we found out later that the object came in from Pittsburgh, came in over the city of Greensburg, which I did not see it, but it moved out towards Route 30 east of Greensburg, made a turn to the south, and then was seen by people all through those little communities out there. It moved out towards the mountains of Laurelville, according to one witness who watched the thing go out that way, kind of hesitated over the mountain, began to track back towards the outskirts of Kecksburg, and made another turn and went down into the woods. And what I found out later, and I interviewed people who were involved in this, some of the locals who saw it go down that afternoon, very low over their head, some of them, they saw it go down the woods. They went down into the woods soon after it fell, and they came across that large metallic acorn-shaped object semi-buried in the ground. So this thing is maybe 10 to 12 feet in length, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter, kind of an off-gold bronze color. But interestingly, there was no weld marks, no seams, no fuselage, no wings. One witness who stood only a few feet away from it was a volunteer fireman. He later became a machinist, worked at all types of metals. He said to him it looked like somebody took liquid metal and poured it into an acorn-shaped mold. And on the raised-up back part of the object, but on the back part you see an acorn, there were what some witnesses described as seeing some type of symbols. And it's a very intriguing story. Hundreds of people descended on that small community that night. It was being broadcast on Pittsburgh radio and TV. And what was so interesting was the fact that, one, you had not only civilians and volunteer firemen searching, but a lot of the reporters from all over the greater Pittsburgh area, from radio, TV, and news, they came out to the scene that night. And surprisingly to many was the arrival of the military. And there were multitudes of people who saw the military, they saw Army, they saw Air Force. And so I interviewed a lot of those reporters, I got statements from a lot of them, and they either saw or interacted with the military. But what I also learned that it was around early the next morning, around 1 o'clock the next morning, according to many eyewitnesses and later confirmed by other independent sources, the object left that area on a large military flatbed tractor trailer. The object was covered with a tarp. There was a military escort, and it went to Lockbourne Air Force Base near Columbus, Ohio. It stayed there under heavy security with a security team. I was told by somebody who was involved with it that they were given the shoot-to-kill order to anybody approach that hangar without the proper clearance. It stayed there for a short time, then went on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And where it's at today, we have no idea.
So I got two questions here. Your version of this event is fairly well known. It's almost like iconic at this point. First question, do you know after all these years, or how have you gathered how many people actually saw this thing in the ground at Kecksburg?
It's been so many years I've been doing that. I've talked to so many people. I can think off the top of my head, probably six that I know, but there were other people who gave me information from people who had passed away, like friends or relatives, who they said were also down in the woods and gave me detailed accounts of what they were told. And there could be more, but right now, from top of my head, that's what I can think of.
Yeah, okay. So reading about this, I was going to guess about 20, but you think that's maybe a little high, huh?
Well, there was a lot of people saw it go out on the flatbed tractor trailer, but actually people seeing it on the ground, that there was only so many that saw it that low and that close. You'd have to see the geography of the area.
Yeah.
And where this thing fell, I mean, this thing fell down the middle of a ravine, it's all surrounded by high hills. There is not a road around or anywhere around that you could see it from the roads or the highways around there, anywhere, or the hills. You'd have to be right there, down there, to see it on the ground where it fell.
So I know that a lot of people say they saw this flatbed truck come out. Is there anybody who saw this thing on the flatbed truck before a tarp was put over it? Do you know?
Yes. There were people that actually fly down there. First, you had some of the civilians that went down and saw it. And then later you had volunteer firemen who came in because there were so many calls coming in around the area. It was thought maybe it was a possible downed aircraft. So you had these volunteer fire departments that are out there searching for a downed aircraft. And that's when a little later, the search teams found the object.
Okay. I have to refine my question. What I actually meant, is there anybody that saw it on the truck without the tarp on it?
There was one person that saw it at a distance over a hill, down over an embankment, not good light condition, that said it looked like the tarp was opened or had opened, and he can see some of it uncovered without the whole tarp over it.
Huh. Okay. All right. So.
Okay, but.
Yeah.
But there was also another witness who was at Wright-Patterson, and this was interesting because this was not at the time. This was years later. after I did the Unsolved Mysteries TV special on this case, and we are just deluged with information around the country. Really interesting information. People had lived in the area years before and have moved away. I got anonymous tips. I've got other things. But anyhow, one of the fellows that called in, and he's now deceased like so many of the others are now, but he was a truck driver, and he worked for a large supply house in Ohio. And there was another truck driver involved as well. But when he called me, he said, I guess I'm allowed to talk about it now that it's on television. And he gave me his whole story. And the late Len Stringfield, I don't know if you recognize his name or not. But
yes,
he was,
I do.
Okay, so he was kind of the father of UFO crash retrievals. And Len and I were very, very close. And he investigated some of the Ohio aspects of the case as well and confirmed all the information he was getting. And but anyhow, his story is interesting, and he apparently saw this thing a few days after the thing was recovered. He talked about a Navy officer coming into this certain facility and ordering this large supply of a special type of glazed engineering brick to be sent to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And apparently there was another truck driver texted there the day before his supply, his first haul of the bricks. And when he got there, I'm trying to remember now. It's been a year, so I thought about some of this information. When he got there, the flatbed trailer was on the outside with the object with a tarp over it. The next day, when he and the other driver both went back, the trailer was there. The tarp was lying on top of the trailer. The object was not there. But what the fella told me when he called in, he said, I did something I wasn't supposed to do at the time. He said, I was a curious guy. We were told, don't look around, just do your job, just unload the bricks. But he was seeing these fellows in white coveralls, periodically changing out of clothing. They had sidearms on. He was quite certain they were Navy personnel, interestingly. And when he didn't see anybody around, he went and entered that building. And that's when he saw this object up on the scaffolding, with a ladder going up and fellows going up there apparently trying to get inside of this thing. And apparently he started asking questions, and apparently they must have thought at first he had proper clearance, and they realized he didn't. And he said he was pretty much threatened and told that, forget about everything you've seen. If you don't keep your mouth shut, we're going to throw you in jail and throw away the key. But in 20 years, this will all be public knowledge. And, of course, that didn't happen. But that's just one of the stories. So he did get to see it. It is very similar to what other people described. He saw the unusual symbols on it, but he wasn't in there but a very short time, and the lighting conditions were not real good.
Yes.
But he did get a good look at it, and he did mention something that's very interesting, because I've only more recently, and if you saw that big article on my website, I wrote about it, this case on the 50th anniversary of Kexbury, I did mention it, and I saw a sketch of it drawn by one of the witnesses, that he did see and mentioned that there was like a rounded, extended protuberance on the front of the object. Well, only very few people were close enough to see that, including another witness who saw it come down about 200 feet over their head that afternoon, right before it fell, and also described that. So that's a very interesting little detail about the physical description of the object.
And did people not see that on the ground because the ground was burying it? Is that the reason, do you think?
That's very likely. There was debris, and it was semi-buried in the ground. There was dirt and debris all around, is what I was told.
Yeah. And so my second question about detail was that you mentioned this too. A lot of people mentioned that this thing changed direction in the air, and of course, if it's a meteor, it can't do that. But you've confirmed that, huh?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, it definitely made that turn from Greensburg to the south, moved out to the mountains about 3.5 miles away, turned back and began to track back outside of Kexburg, made another turn and went down into the woods. But the locals who saw it go down said it did not go down at a high rate of speed. It went down almost like it made a controlled landing, about the speed of a small aircraft on approach to an airport. And no parachutes were ever reported before or afterwards at the site.
So is your conclusion that the military or whoever would be, NORAD or whatever, tracked this thing across Canada into the United States? Do you think the military knew where it was going to land?
I don't know if they knew where I was going to land, but I think they had a pretty good idea of the general area, and officially it was not being tracked. But I think there's good indication it probably was. I think what's really surprised a lot of the locals and others that got to the scene, that the military had arrived so quickly. There are some locals who said they began to see a small military presence within the hour after it fell. And then during the next few hours is when a lot of the military started to show up from different directions.
Yeah, that's the funny part is, if I'm right, officially the military said only three people were there. Isn't that right? Or something like that? Like,
right. Well, the only official document that has ever shown up on it, and there were many FOIA requests that I did and others did, the only document that showed up was actually the Air Force Project Blue Book report, because Blue Book was actually investigating UFO reports during that time period. And it indicated in that document that only three Air Force personnel were involved in the search. And we know from multitudes of witnesses there was a lot more military there, and many people said there were armed soldiers definitely on the scene.
Okay, Stan, this was 49 years ago, and you've been dealing with this forever. So let me just ask you point blank, what do you think it was?
Okay, well, first of all, it was 58 years ago.
Oh, and I'm sorry, you're right. It's 59 years ago, not 49 years ago. Right, yeah, okay.
59 years, and I have always kept an open mind to all possibilities, and I still do that because we need specific conferable information of what it was. There have been multitudes of theories out there from the time it happened, and everybody thinks their theories is right, and they're all different. And I've seen nobody coming up with any credible definitive evidence that it was connected, their theories connected to what happened. I've talked to a lot of people over the years who were involved in the space program back in that time period, and they scratch their heads when they look at the data. So I always said, could this have been a very advanced, very secretive man-made space probe with some type of re-entry capability, which we've never learned about yet for whatever reason, even though so many of those documents, so many of those records in that time period have been declassified. Well, the Soviet stuff, the same thing. We've looked at a lot of that type of thing and have eliminated certain things. Or it could have been something that was not man-made. And we just don't know. And there's stories out there that could support either theory. So I keep that in mind. And it, regardless of what it was a very interesting case. And for the military to respond as fast as they did, apparently it's something they wanted to get their hands on very quickly.
Yeah, not to mention the fact it was like a severe response, too. I mean, like you said, they scared people off with guns and stuff, you know. So that's not, I mean, you don't do that if something's not important. So
no, and where did that jurisdiction come from? I mean, that's been searched for years, and a lot of research investigation was done, and nobody's been able to find the paper trail, like where did all the equipment come from, the personnel, where did the orders come from? Very interesting case, regardless of what the object was.
Here's a very question on real obscure detail, Stan. Did people on the ground there that night, did they mention military insignias? In other words, like particular branches of the military or things on the uniforms? Because I've been hearing, I'm starting to wonder more and more what the people that respond to these things actually aren't in the military on some, you know, top secret thing, and they just look like they're in the military. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, apparently there was a lot. You have to see the geography of the area. You had the little community of Kecksburg down at their fire station or truck station, which we were told by different sources that the military used it as a temporary command post that night. Then you've got another area which is closer to the site that people found their way on, which they saw a lot of military in that area. And then you had that big, narrow country road that surrounded and paralleled along the big wooded area where it fell, where you had hundreds of people that night jamming the road. There were military up there, plus state police, plus firemen. There was a lot of activity there. But what we heard is, yes, we heard that there were some people who said they saw Army for sure and Air Force for sure. There were some who told us that they either saw or interacted with NASA personnel, and there were others who said they saw men in suits, men in dark suits, and indication was that they were actually giving orders to the military. So that's what we heard anyhow, with no way to confirm that.
So you've been doing this now for like almost for 50, 60 years, right? All right, do you want to give me just like, Like, can you just give me like a 25-word response to how much does the government lie to us? What are your thoughts on that?
I've been doing this now for going on 65 years.
Yeah, right.
And I've never personally seen a UFO or a Bigfoot or a ghost. I've seen a lot of evidence. I've interviewed thousands of UFO witnesses, hundreds of Bigfoot witnesses, and many, many cryptid witnesses. I deal with these cases constantly, regularly, almost all the time, with current and past reports. My hotline's been open since 1969. And I've said this for years and years. I believe that the government knows more than they're telling the public, but I also feel that they very likely do not have the answers themselves. I think they're finding more and more, just as I found being in the field since 65, that we're dealing with something that is so beyond our present scientific understanding. Nobody understands it, and it's the stranger, the more I know about, the stranger it is. And, you know, the Kexford case is very interesting, but I have dealt with multitudes of incidents, even in the last year. I mean, a very close-range, low-level UFO case or UAP cases that you cannot easily dismiss. There's something else going on here. I said years ago, there's likely more than one origin to the unknown category of the UFO mystery. Maybe a small percentage may be extraterrestrial. But I think more and more, and it's very complex. This is where the Bigfoot stuff and a lot of the other weird stuff keeps coming into it, especially what happened last year. If you go to my website, there's a very big article I wrote a few days ago released about 2023.
I read it,
about,
yeah.
Weird cases on there. It's just incredible what was going on. And I'm telling you, I think there's a correlation between a lot of these different things. I've dealt with multitudes of really well-documented strange cases. There's a physical and a non-physical component to it. And for lack of a better term, I'll call it interdimensional.
So I have a lot of Bigfoot people on the show. We had a panel on, just before the first of the year. And I asked everyone on the panel, do they have any thoughts about this about Bigfoot not being an actual animal, being some sort of paranormal, more normal activity? And all three of these people said, oh, absolutely not. It's completely an undiscovered primate. And I find this unusual because more and more of the stuff I read about Bigfoot seems to be more and more, like, for lack of a better term, non-physical. I think it's what you're talking about. So do you... first of all, let me ask you, how did you move from the UFO stuff to the Bigfoot stuff? What happened there for yourself?
Well, it's nothing I was looking for. I mean, this is what happened. So got to go back in history a little bit. So I was aware of Bigfoot reports in Pennsylvania, and I was looking into some of those reports in the 1960s. I was of the opinion at that time that Bigfoot was an unknown primate, an unknown animal had been seen for years. There's Native American legends in Pennsylvania. There's articles in the 1800s about sightings of these creatures long before they called them Bigfoot. They called the wild man of the forest.
Right.
And that's what I thought it was. So 1972, well, first of all, let me go back a little further than that. So 1969, I set up a hotline for the public. As people were learning about my hotline, the phone in my home is ringing off the hook day and night. I decide I can't do this all on my own. I'm going to try to organize a volunteer group of research people, which I did. So in 1970, I found the first of three volunteer research groups. And for many, many years, we had those groups out there investigating. Anyhow, so in 1970, I founded the first group, Westmoreland County UFO Study Group. We started in Greensburg, moving to Pittsburgh area. By 1973, I had it set up, and we'd respond to cases across the state of Pennsylvania. The groups were kind of unique. Most people involved were specialists. We had scientists, engineers, technicians, police officers, former military specialists. We all did this around our full-time jobs. We did it out of our own pockets. And we were very, very busy with cases coming in all the time. And so in 1972, here's how it all began, when I started to notice something just doesn't make any sense here. So only a few miles from where I live, in a large wooded area, some individual landowners began to call me. And they'd been there for years, and they said, they're hearing these screams and howls from the woods. They're hearing something heavy bipedal walking. They're seeing strange lights in the sky. They saw a broad-shouldered creature chasing dogs. Strange footprints were showing up. And these little spheres of light were being seen in the bushes near their home. And like, what in the heck is this all about? And that went on for, you know, weeks and weeks. and very credible people calling in, didn't even know their neighbors were calling me about it. So that was 72. So 1973 comes around, and we were very lucky that my group was already pretty well set up, especially in Southwest PA. So anyhow, 1973, first we have the biggest UFO wave ever documented. Hundreds and hundreds of UFO reports all year long from January 1st to the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So 1973, you don't have the internet like today. You didn't have cell phones. People would often call the police or newspaper report something. So back then, a lot of the local newspapers, the statewide newspapers, and even some of the national media were picking up a lot of these UFO reports, because a lot of them were not just lights in the sky. A lot of these were objects we could not identify. A lot of these were large structured objects below the ground. There were, oh my, there were innocent cars were being paced. There were things hovering over highways. There were landing reports. I mean, it was just incredible.
Stan, can I stop you for a second? Reading your 2023 report, I was astonished by how many of those sightings were during the day. Is that unusual for your area, or is that?
Yeah.
Uh huh.
It's unusual for any area.
Yeah,
that's why
I brought it up.
Three, which was the last, I mean, really strange, big wave. We had just began to talk about it. But last year, 2023, is another year where there was a lot of close-range, low-level, many daylight UFO, UAP reports. And then there was a lot of Bigfoot sightings at close-range and daylight, encrypted reports, and other anomalies coming in. And I'm telling you, the more I know about these things, and others around the country are seeing the same thing, I started writing about this back in the 70s, and now you have many people, especially a lot of experienced Bigfoot researchers have been around for a long time, who are now beginning to open their minds and realizing there's more to this than any of us understand, whatever it is. And I'm not suggesting, when I get into some of these reports, that Bigfoot is riding around in a spaceship or another planet. That's not what I'm saying whatsoever when you hear some reports. I'm saying we're dealing with something that nobody understands where it's coming from or why it's happening. It's very strange and unusual, but whatever we're dealing with, it comes and it goes. It's here and it's gone. It can leave evidence at times. There's EM effects involved. There's an energy connection. It's very complex, but this is going on all over the country and around the world now.
All right, so I obviously haven't read every single investigation you've ever done. I did read the 2023 things, and I read some other stuff. Have you... I brought up to this panel that I had on last month. Have you talked to people? I've read about 24 reports where people say they've encountered Bigfoot and seen it disappear right before their eyes. Have you ran into that?
Yes, and that's what we haven't even gone into yet. So going back, this is going 73, what happened? So 73, first we had all these UFO reports. Then in the summer of 73, we had the biggest Bigfoot outbreak ever documented that went on to 1974. Many of those were in daylight, sometimes more than one creature seen together. So we're out there investigating all these reports. We're getting a lot of reports referred to us from the law enforcement agencies, from the newspapers. We're out there day and night. I mean, my teams were on location sometimes within minutes and hours after they occurred, which is why we could document this so well. So one of the first things that showed up was very unusual. And this is all type of weather all year round. We have these very strange, unusual footprints with big strides that under different ground conditions, including snow, they go for a distance and they abruptly stop when there should be more tracks. That was one of the first things that didn't make any sense. There's no way you could have fabricated it under the conditions we found. And then we began, again, reports come in from widespread areas, miles away, other counties, other parts of the state. I mean, it's incredible. But then you see this pattern of a UFO sighting in a certain area. Within minutes to hours or days later, a Bigfoot sighting or vice versa. And then we had some of those amazing cases with UFOs and Bigfoot seen together at the same time and place. And I can tell you some of the cases, but they're very detailed. They're very long. But I'll give you one, I'll give you a short version of one. It's probably one of the most famous cases on record. And then the case that convinced me that what we're dealing with is not a flesh and blood animal, if you like.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. So, October 25th, 1973, my hotline is ringing with numerous UFO reports from across the state on that day. 10:30 that night, I get a call from a state trooper from Uniontown Barracks in Fayette County, which is still is one of the most active areas probably in the country for UFO and cryptid cases year after year. But anyhow, I get a call from the state trooper. He asked me if I could get a team up that area as soon as possible, that he had just come back from investigating this multiple witness UFO landing, and he thought it was something still up in the field, up in the pasture. So we got our teams together, my team together that night. We got our radio equipment, our radiation meters, other equipment, and found our way up to Fayette County. I believe we spent the whole night up there. And it's a long, long story. I'm just going to give you an abbreviated part of it. I wrote a book called Silent Invasion, which goes into all these reports in great detail. And I'm telling you, people from all over the world still call me about that book and the strangeness of what we uncovered.
Yeah, we'll, anyhow, we'll link to your books on our blog. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so anyhow, we found out about 9 o'clock that night, you had 15 people in that rural area that observed this barn-sized big red ball about 100 feet in diameter hovering in the sky and slowly moving down towards the ground.
It's a ball?
A big sphere.
A sphere 100 feet across, huh?
Yeah, a huge barn-sized, big, huge, round thing.
That's huge.
That was, oh, yeah, huge. And this thing's coming down slowly towards the ground. So it was the farmer's son, who would be the adult in what I'm going to tell you, was coming out to visit his family. He had owned the farm, and he sees the people standing outside looking at this thing. So he goes to a higher location, to another family's residence, to get a better look. And he and these two young boys watch this thing coming down, so they decide they want to go see what this thing is. So anyhow, before they go up into the pasture, they stop over his dad's farm. He grabs a 30-06 and some ammunition. And within that ammunition, he didn't know at the time, were two tracer bullets. So you just have those bullets, when you fire them, just get that luminous trail.
Right.
Anyhow, as we're riding down the farm road, the dogs are going crazy in the area. They hear this loud whining noise and these baby crying sounds. And they make their way up to the They walk their way up to the top where the pasture is, and they're standing there because they can't believe what they're seeing. About 250 feet away, that big object is now on the ground or right above it. But now it's not a complete sphere. It's like a big white dome, like a half a sphere, big white dome making that whining noise and illuminating the whole area. And this thing is big. So they're just sitting there for a few minutes just watching this thing, trying to figure out what it is. But then their attention is drawn to a barbed wire fence about 75 feet away. And along that barbed wire fence are these two huge Bigfoot creatures slowly walking their direction. The one in front is 8 foot tall. The one behind is about 7 foot tall. They described in great detail. These things have long, dark, matted hair hanging off the body. They had no neck. The arms were so long, they were hanging below the knees almost to the ground. They were walking kind of a stoop fashion. They have luminous, glowing green eyes, and they're making these baby crying, whining noises. Well, the one young boy is so frightened, he ran out of the field. The other boy starts yelling at the fella, the older guy, shoot him, shoot him. So the guy fires his first shot, which turned out to be a tracer. He fired over their head. There was no response. But this is what happened right next time when he fired the second tracer. The largest of the two creatures reaches out to grab that tracer, makes a loud whining, crying noise, and that huge, luminous object in the field vanishes. It doesn't take off. It just disappears.
This creature actually, like, grabbed the bullet in midair?
Well, it went, we don't think it grabbed, it went out as though to try to grab it. We don't think it did, but it went to grab it, and the moment it made that crying noise and did that, that huge object has vanished.
Huh.
Okay. It didn't rise off the ground. It just vanished. Anyhow, at that point, the creatures turn around, start walking back along the fence line. And at that point, the guy's firing live ammo from his 30-06 into them, mainly aiming at the biggest creature with no effect on it whatsoever. They run back to their truck, go back to their farmhouse, told the family what happened. They go to their neighbors and called the state police. So the troop arrives 45 minutes later. And again, I'm giving the short part of the story is a lot more detail. The trooper told me they went up to the field, looked for evidence in the troop car. The trooper told me the area where the object had been on the ground was self-luminescent and glowing, about 100 feet or more in diameter.
Stan, so I didn't catch that. Did this half-dome thing actually touch the ground?
The object itself was on the ground.
It was on the ground, huh? Okay.
It was on the ground or just inches above it. It looked like it was on the ground.
Right,
them.
Okay. I didn't catch that. Go ahead.
Okay. So anyhow, he said He shined his flashlight and he could barely see the beam. The farm animals wouldn't go near it. And he said if he had a newspaper, he was certain he could have read the newspaper from the light coming off the glow.
Oh, my God.
That's the short part of the story. It got much stranger. We don't have time to even get into it. Anyhow, it was one of the weirdest cases ever. But as the weeks went on, other very strange cases came in from widespread areas. So here's the case that convinced me, among others, that whatever we're dealing with Bigfoot is not a normal flesh and blood animal. Would you like me to tell that to you?
Yeah, I would. It's like
okay, so this happened way up in the mountains of southwest Pennsylvania. It was February 6, 1974. And I don't know your age, so you may remember this. Your listeners, some will remember it.
I'm 68. I'm very old. So.
Okay, so anyhow, there was a big national trucker strike around the country. There was gas rationing. A lot of people remember gas rationing.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so there was violence going on across the country on the highways. So in Pennsylvania, you had the state police and the National Guard patrolling together. I couldn't get gas that night to get up to the scene. But you had some members of both the National Guard and the state police responding to this incident. I was up there early the next morning with my team, and I interviewed the primary investigator. And he said, by the time they found this place way, way up in the mountains, everything was over. But he said, the witnesses were generally frightened. They gave very detailed accounts of what took place. But he said what convinced him that something happened was the animal reaction at the farm, which I have seen numerous times myself and others have. That's commonly reported with some low-level UFO case, but with a lot of Bigfoot sightings, that even the most ferocious dogs, when they're close to these creatures, they don't bark, they shake, they cower, they don't move, they don't eat right sometimes for a couple of days. That's very, very common. And there's animal reactions of other types reported as well. But these people had several big dogs. A trooper told them when they go out on scene, these dogs didn't make a sound. They wouldn't move. And he said that's what convinced him that something really strange happened up there. And when I got there next morning, all the dogs were back to normal and they were all barking. So anyhow, that was the case. But anyhow, here's what happened. So it's the lady involved is sitting there in her living room watching TV that evening as a normal evening. Suddenly she hears on a little front porch of her cabin home, she hears something knocking some empty soda cans around. Well, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks before she had a pack of wild dogs came through, and she thought, I bet the dogs are back. I'll just shoot over their head. I'll get my 16-gauge double-barrel shotgun, I'll load one chamber, and I'll shoot over their head.
Right.
So she goes ahead and does that. She loads one chamber. She walks up to the front door. She hits the switch to turn on the porch light. She opens the door, and she steps out. There's no dogs on the porch. 6 feet away from her is a 7-foot-tall, hair-covered Bigfoot that as soon as the light came on, it put its arm straight up over its head. So how did she respond? She aims the gun at it, and she pulls the trigger. She said there's this bright flash of light, like a strobe on a camera, a flash on a camera, and it vanishes right in front of her. But that's not the end of the story. So her in-laws...
Oh, hold it, Stan. I got to ask you. Did she think that this creature put its hands up over its head as a form of, like, surrender, like, don't shoot? Or was it just something?
I don't think she really thought about it. It just was what she reported.
Okay.
When she saw this thing, her first reaction was to pull the trigger.
Right.
And that's what she did. So her in-laws heard the gunshot in the car and asked her what she was shooting at. She tried to tell him. So reportedly then her son-in-law grabbed his sidearms, a very dark wooded area, started walking up the area. At one point, he reported kind of 4 or 5 hairy people with eyes like coals of fire. And it was about the same time there was this large, luminous object, like a big Christmas ornament, they said, hovering over the trees at the same time. That's when they called the state police. And, again, there's other details of the story. That was one case that, again, convinced me we're dealing with something. And it's not just that. I have learned a lot. I've investigated multitudes of these cases now. There's so many aspects of the Bigfoot phenomena that people are not aware of. I've written about some of this for years and years. Others around the country are aware of this as well. You know, back in 73, I started writing about these cases, and I was in touch with a lot of the well-known names in the Bigfoot field at the time from the United States and other countries. And I found out that quite a number of these people were aware of these strange reports in their area, but they told me, they said, well, we're not going to write about it because we don't want to be laughed at by our peers. My position was, look, these cases are well documented. I don't have the answers. I don't know what's going on, but I'm putting it out there because hopefully we'll get more information in. Well, now if you've been watching the last few years, researchers from all over the country are reporting similar things. You're hearing more about it on TV shows. You're hearing a lot of podcasts about it. Several very good books have been written about the same thing. These things are going on more and more. And the one thing that I noticed years ago, and it's now going on all over the country, and many Bigfoot researchers in the field are aware of this, and many of them now have experienced it themselves. There's in areas where you have a history of Bigfoot activity, many researchers and witnesses are seeing these small balls of light, these small orbs of light coming out of the woods. And in some cases, like here in Pennsylvania, they come up within a few feet of witnesses.
Yeah, I've heard these balls of light things have become more and more common, and they're being more and more reported. And as you've mentioned, too, like I just read a story recently about some woman. I can't remember what city she was in, but she's in an urban area. She's in an office building, and she goes down into the parking lot to get her car, and she said there's this ball about the size of a basketball hovering about at her, her head height, about 4 or 5 feet off the ground. And people, and I think you even mentioned this in your 2023 report. It's not, people aren't really scared of this so much as it's just weird. It's like, I don't know, maybe these things aren't big enough to scare people. I don't know. But she said this thing was basically just going around the parking lot. And it's like, well, you don't see that every day. I mean, shit, you know?
I've been working on this case. I've been aware of this case since the 1960s. I've called them mini UFOs for years. They range the smallest ones about the size of oversized fireflies. Most of them are around the size of a golf ball or baseball. Many are also around a foot or two in diameter. They're quite often just luminous spheres of different colors, but there's other reports they have where these things, even in daylight, look solid and metallic. And I can tell you, in 2022, so if you go back on my website, you can read some of these reports, and there's stuff, amazing reports on there. We had the biggest surge of these small spheres of light low to the ground in daylight coming up within feet of people. Over the years, I've had reports of these things pacing vehicles, entering people's homes and cars through open windows. I've had them knocking on the front of windows of people's homes. It's just amazing stuff. But let me just give you an idea of a couple of cases from 2022. And then they continue through 2023, and some of that's on the report that you read yesterday. But going back to 2022, among the daylight reports are interesting. But so in October of last year, up in Fayette County, 6 o'clock in the morning, one of my research associates, Jim Brown, investigator, is a very high-tech guy. Anyhow, around 6 in the morning, it was cold out. This guy just had, I think, his robe on, his slippers. His wife found him sound asleep on the porch in his slippers in the cold weather, which you would never do. He told her that when he was going out to get the newspaper just been delivered, this small, I think it's about a foot in diameter, white sphere at eye level was between him and the newspaper box. And when he got close to it, he got so overly tired he couldn't stay awake. So 3 days later, about 40 miles away, up in the Laurel Highlands area, which is also very active, it's very close to Chestnut Ridge, which is one of the most active areas in the country here in Pennsylvania with yearly ongoing weird phenomena and cryptids and UFOs and balls of light, all this stuff. Anyhow, 2:30 in the morning, here's this woman in her home. She's going into the restroom. She comes out 5 feet away in her living room, hovering, is about foot and a half to 2 foot diameter blue sphere with a dark mass moving around the side of it. She took one step towards it. She said she felt like a slight electrical jolt. And all of a sudden, she got so tired, she said she couldn't stay awake. But she told me the next day she was very sickly, very weak, but she said, I'm an insomniac. I don't fall asleep. For me to fall asleep like that was completely unusual. So here you had two very similar cases within 3 days of each other.
Have you ran into any reports or where people have said in their – I've heard also that people see these spheres in their homes, that they pass in and out of walls. They actually, like, you know, go through the wall, come into the house, and then leave. Have you ran into that?
Yeah, well, that one I just mentioned was inside the lady's house.
Oh, yeah,
the living room.
But did she actually see it pass through the wall? That's my point.
No, she doesn't know what happened. She went in and went sleep. But yes, I have had those reports for years. I had those kind of reports, and I'm telling you, what is going on is just amazing what's happening. And like I said, over the years now, I've seen more and more patterns of these type of things. There's EM effects, electromagnetic effects involved with some of the Bigfoot reports that many people have never heard about. If you go back to probably the 1950s, you're probably aware of this, that there were low-level UFO incidents where objects were hovering near vehicles, and people would report that their motor would begin to sputter, the headlights would dim, the objects would move off, and all the power would come back on. Similar things have been reported with Bigfoot. It's not that commonly known. I've investigated some in Pennsylvania. There's others around the country. But there are incidents where a vehicle is near a Bigfoot. A Bigfoot runs out in front of a car, and suddenly the car begins to lose power, and the creature moves off, and the power comes back on. So, and there's a lot of other things involved that people are completely unaware of.
Do you think, Stan, especially when it comes to these spheres, but do you think that these incidences are increasing, or that more and more people are reporting them? Do you have any feel on that at all?
It could well be both. We're definitely hearing more and more reports. I've been in touch with many researchers all over the country who in the last few years, they have similar reports coming in as well. There's a lot of similarities with the different details coming in. I'm telling you, it's all energy connected. What I found years ago, the pattern was that many close-range, low-level UFO reports and many encounters with Bigfoot and other cryptids often occur in the vicinity of high-energy sources. So you've got a lot of cases around power plants, high-tension power lines, radio and cell phone towers, gas wells, gas lines, bodies of water, railroad tracks, etc. There is definitely an energy connection with many of these reports that are coming in.
Okay, after studying Bigfoot then for 50 years, and look, I know you're speculating. I know that. None of us know what this actually is. Do you have any guesses or thoughts about what's going on here?
Well, it goes much deeper. It's so complex. The more I know about it, the stranger it is. I think I said that before. I think I've said years ago, the phenomenon is so strange, it protects itself. That is so bizarre and so unusual. How do you even try to bring this out to the public? But there are so many witnesses who have seen these things who would never believe it. Hunters, all the hunters call me all the time. People out there from all walks of life, including many first responders I've interviewed over the years who have had either Bigfoot or UFO or other encounters. These people would never believe these things are real until they had their own experience. And I'm telling you, many people's lives have been changed because of this. But again, it's very, very bizarre. There's many other cryptid reports I've investigated. And I get reports on these things all the time, including one in the last couple of weeks, another odd one, which I'm not ready to talk about yet. I have more witnesses to interview. But I've investigated everything from the Thunderbird reports, these huge flying creatures have been seen for years, to out-of-place animals like Black Panthers that are seen yearly, including one by a hunter in the afternoon several weeks ago up in this area. But I can even tell you some really interesting similarities here, if you'd like.
Sure. Please.
Okay, so here's the deal. You can have a Bigfoot sighting, a crypto sighting, a UFO sighting almost anywhere if you're in the right time and place. But there are certain specific geographical locations or properties that, for whatever reason, this phenomenon seems to concentrate and focus on.
Hey, before you go on, though, I want to ask you. So I grew up in a small town, very much like Greensburg. Do you think it's actually helped you that you've been hyper-localized in your investigation? I mean, basically Pennsylvania, which I will say, is hyper, relatively speaking, hyper-localized. I would think that your intimacy with that terrain probably has helped you, hasn't it?
I don't really know. I can tell you, I'm in Greensburg, the county seat of Westmoreland County. But a lot of these cases are not right in this area. I mean, there are many reports, but this is all over southwestern PA and all over many other parts of the state. It's not just one place, but there are certain specific geographical locations, especially along the Chestnut Ridge and other areas, where this phenomena is ongoing, where you have these, continuous reports. When I say continuous, more than normal number of reports coming in of ongoing phenomena from cryptids and UFOs and the balls of light and paranormal phenomena, all kind of stuff going on. It's It's very interesting, let me tell you.
So when you say that you think the phenomenon is really complex, have you figured out at all, like, through the complexity, like, do you have any theory of what's going on?
The more I know about it, the more unusual it is, but we keep seeing the similarities, the patterns showing up. But here's what I was going to tell you. Sometimes when you have these localized outbreaks, let me give you an example, going back in history a little bit. So 1979, this is outside the Pittsburgh area. This is on the border of Armstrong and Westmoreland County. Something fell from the sky, went out into a field. In a rural area, the residents around there began to report screams and howls and balls of light and Bigfoot stuff going on. It really intensified in 1981 and 82, went on for months and months. They were not only seeing Bigfoot, there was a lot of Black Panther sightings in the area. So when we're talking about Black Panthers, we're talking about Black Jaguars, Black Leopards,
yeah,
animals from this part of the world. They've been seeing them for years in Pennsylvania and other parts of the country where they don't exist in science as we know it. But that's what's going on. But let me tell you one case I investigated years ago. It's a really interesting story of how there's a similarity here. Because with the Bigfoot reports, and again, this is something I don't think we talked about here yet, a lot of the cases, these creatures look very solid and physical. And we had quite a number of those reports last year, if you remember, if you looked at my report. And I investigate these every year. But there are many, many other reports that are something more interesting, going back to 73. Sometimes these creatures are more misty or foggy looking. Sometimes part of the body, people tell me, is solid, and other parts is out of focus or not physically solid. Sometimes it appears to be more gliding or floating above the ground rather than running. There's a lot of things people just don't hear about or are not aware of. But anyhow, so going back to this Black Panther report. So this is February 1983. This is way up in the mountains. Anyhow, it was a cold morning. This guy's getting home around 1 o'clock in the morning. His car's overheating. So he pulls the car into the garage, into the driveway, which is pretty well lit. He went in to get a can of antifreeze. He comes back and he's putting antifreeze in the car. A couple of minutes later, he hears this loud growl behind him. He turns around and look. I think about 20 feet away, here's this big black house cat on the ground and hissing at him. We didn't think much of it because it's out in the country and there's cats all over the place. He goes back to putting more antifreeze in the car. A few minutes later, he hears a louder growl. He turns around to look, and he couldn't believe what he saw. That big house cat has physically grown to twice its size and is hissing at him. So he throws that antifreeze can at it. The thing growls, starts walking out the road, which is well lit up the street. He runs his house to get his pistol. He said when he came back out a few minutes later, he could not believe what he saw. He said, "What I saw looked like an animal I saw in the zoo." He said it looked like a full-sized Black Panther with a long, swishy tail and glowing, luminous yellow eyes growling at me. He said, "I took a shot at it. I don't know if I hit it, but moments later, it physically vanished right in front of him."
Man, I hear these reports too. I don't know what to make of it. I do have a question, though. So if we're going to go into the assumption, and let's just stick to the Bigfoot phenomena right now, because it's like you said, this is really complex and can get confusing. If Bigfoot is not a regular primate, like, not so much what is it, but is it we know of no animal on Earth that's basically interdimensional. So is it from Earth? Is it from somewhere else? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that at all?
You know what? We can speculate. It's just like with the UFO reports that, you know, the Aero investigation office is doing now. And you look at some of those reports, and I've been dealing with, like I said, cases for years and years. I mean, I've literally worked on thousands of cases. Some of these cases are incredible. I can give you examples of some. But anyhow, even in recent years, solid, large objects, low the ground, low altitude, they're hovering in the sky, and they just physically begin to slowly fade away and vanish.
Yeah.
In other cases, they just suddenly appear out of nowhere. They disappear. In many cases I've had, even this year, really good cases, happened November 16th, just a few months ago, in a beautiful afternoon, of these things physically changed from one form into another. There are similarities with some of the UFO, UAP cases we're dealing with and some of the cryptid cases. And I'm telling you, I think the more we know it, and I think the government's aware of this more and more now, too, that that's why there's so much secrecy, because they don't understand it either. How could you come out to the public and tell them that all this stuff is somehow connected? Because nobody understands it. It makes a lot of it makes no sense. But you got so many credible people describing and reporting the same thing. Listen, I had a lady call me last week who was crying hysterically after the incident happened to her a few months ago. And she said she hasn't been able to go outside in the dark ever since. I had a hunter call me yesterday afternoon, been out of the woods for years, and he was terrified when the incident happened with him that I'm not ready to talk about yet. I have more investigation to do. I'm telling you, this stuff is going on much more commonly than people realize.
Have you found, Stan, that in the last few years, especially since 2017, and the New York Times decided to publish stuff on UFOs, that are people, you know, is there less of a stigma to reporting this now?
Be honest with you, I don't think there's been any connection between that, maybe slightly, but I would tell you, overall, especially in this area, I don't think it had a lot to do with the reports coming in. I receive sighting reports every year, all year round, all type of weather conditions. But I can, and each year varies, you know, the kind of reports. What we saw, like I said, in 2022 was that a lot of good reports, but that surge of these small balls of light below the ground coming near people, very detailed case from all over the state. Go to my website, you can read about a lot of this. That was the big thing there. Now, 2023, you've got all kind of weird things going on, from close-range, low-level UFO sightings, a lot of reports in daylight of large, cylindrical, cigar-shaped objects, wingless objects, in many cases just hovering in beautiful skies and just instantly just vanishing or moving so slow. People are saying they're sometimes they're moving so slow, an aircraft couldn't move that slow and stay up in the sky.
I talked to a lot of reporters who are connected to the military, and there's this rumor going around right now that says that not only is the CIA privy to this stuff, but they say that they have figured out how the UFOs are cloaking themselves, and they figured out a way to jam it. Have you heard this? I mean, it's just these are just rumors, but, you know, are you connected that way at all? Or
I hear all kind of rumors all the time from people. You hear all kind of stories, and you know, I don't like to deal with rumors because many times I've heard of rumors of incidents and sightings, especially over many, many years I've been doing this. You hear rumors of somebody shot and killed a Bigfoot, and every time we try to follow up on it, we can never find any evidence that anything happened.
But I know. I know.
That's why I like to go with rumors.
Yeah. So the other thing is, and this bodes well toward what you're talking about, I've heard two completely opposite rumors from people in the military, too. One is that they've successfully reverse engineered some of this technology and are starting to actually try to implement it. And then the other rumor I've heard is exactly the opposite, that they can't figure it out at all. And that's the reason they don't want to make it public, because they don't want to tell the public we don't know what's going on. You know?
Yes, I've heard both of those for years. That's been circulating for a long, long time. And it could be true in various cases.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something we have recovered and they have been able to recover some technology and understand it, but there may be other cases where we may have it but not understand it.
And this is the other thing too, you've been doing this for forever, so when people hear, you know, think about extraterrestrials, I think they think of one, like, single solitary species, and there's a possibility that all sorts of people are coming here, you know, and they could be anywhere from 200 to 1 million years ahead of us, you know. And so, you know, I don't know if you can make any sort of, like, generalizations about it. I don't know if you can.
I've investigated so many cases from the 60s. Back in the 60s, there was a lot of reports in Pennsylvania and other areas of Pennsylvania, many reports in daylight of very large metallic battleship gray-colored big dome disc-shaped objects, some with domes, some with portals and windows, many reports, low-level landing reports. I mean, just amazing, amazing cases. And there were reports of occupants, small, 4, 4.5, 5 foot tall, small humanoid creatures, some that looked very, very human-like being reported. Some of these witnesses they interviewed were extremely credible witnesses. And but then as the years go on, you know, stories change a little, and Now we're getting different type of descriptions. I mean, we don't get as many of the typical flying saucer reports as we used to. We're getting big black triangular objects, the cigar-shaped objects, rectangular objects. Well, let me tell you a good case. June 1st, 2013. This is about 20-some miles east of Pittsburgh on Route 30, which is a busy four-lane highway. This is around 10:30 at night. Here's a woman who did not believe in UFOs and a three-year-old child. And this woman came out of a convenience store, making a left, going eastbound on 30. And she told me, said, I couldn't believe it. There's nobody around me. I have cars way ahead of me and way behind me. Nobody near me. She said, I had to brake right in the middle of a four-lane highway. She said about six, I think it was about 60 feet away originally, about 60 feet off the ground, is this huge metallic rectangular object. She said it looked like a gondola of a blimp without the blimp. You had two levels of light that are completely unlike navigational lighting. And her three-year-old baby yells, Mommy, flying iPad in the sky. So anyhow, she's on her telephone and talking to somebody trying to describe what she's seeing. She had to go under the object to go home. When she does, pretty much all the electronics on her dashboard goes out. Her indicators for temperature, for airbag, the radio station went off the air. She tried to take a picture with her phone. It would not go into the photo mode, which is more and more being reported. These oddities, EM effects with video equipment and phone cameras and things like that. Anyhow, she went down the road about a half a mile away, and everything came back on again. Those are the kind of cases you cannot easily dismiss, and I've been involved in many of those kind of reports.
And, yeah, like you said, too, I'm hearing the same thing, that more and more people are failing to take pictures of these things. They try, and it doesn't work, you know? So I suppose, all right, I will throw out a theory for you myself, because I speculate and I talk for a living. So these little balls that people see, or the bigger balls, or whatever, the ones that are basically smaller than beach balls, you know, whatever size they are, it just seems to me that they're just probes, you know? Why go down to the surface if you can send a little probe that you got, you know? That's the way I look at it, but they're just, you know, I don't know.
Well, back in the 60s when I started hearing these reports and some of the case I had afterwards, that's what was suggested to me, that we're dealing with some type of probe, some that is sending back some kind of video and audio data to somewhere. But over the years and some of the cases we're getting now that are so strange that I'm not so sure that's what it is anymore. And I'm hesitant to even say this, but I've talked to other researchers now that have similar reports. They're reports of these spheres changing into other life forms, believe it or not, and creatures changing into other creatures.
Oh, Stan, this is the big deal here, and you're touching on this. Even when it comes to the actual flying objects, people are reporting they're changing shape, and it's like, exactly. What the hell?
Yeah.
Shit.
Read the report that's on my website now from 2023. I put it up yesterday. Read individually some of those reports, and you'll see some of these things going on. I mean, just to give you an example, here was a very good incident. Just happened November 16th in Point Marion, PA, up in Fayette County. You can read the whole report on there that my research associate provided. So it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was like 60 degrees in November. It was a really nice day, clear weather. So this lady, the neighbor, these are pseudonyms involved here, the neighbor happens to look out a window. She's going to go outside because it's so beautiful, and she notices above her neighbor's home, like 50 feet above it, this solid black triangle that's just hovering there. And anyhow, as she's watching this thing, it begins to change form from a triangle to a square and then back to a triangle. So she tried to call the neighbor, but there was no answer. So she decides she's going to go over and get a better look at this thing, and found that her neighbor, who didn't know this thing was hovering over her home, working out in the yard. So now they're both watching this thing, and it's going up. It keeps changing form. It rises up to about 500 feet above the house, and they get a good look at this thing. And neither one of them has a camera with them or a phone with them. And it gets to the point where it keeps rising in the sky, and it finally gets to the point where it looks like it's just a dark spot in the sky, and it's gone. I mean, that's the kind of things that we're hearing about. And these are not people who are interested in UFOs. Most of the reports they get are people from the general public who know nothing about these things, and they're even reluctant to call in about it.
Yeah. So let me ask you this too. Have you noticed this about the people who do call in these reports? I'm starting to think that the people who see UFOs are generally usually skeptics. In other words, the converse being the people who do believe in UFOs don't see them much if ever. I mean, look at you. You say you've never seen one.
I've seen lots of evidence. I've never seen a UFO or a Bigfoot or a ghost or anything along that line. I believe I chased a Bigfoot in the dark in 1973 when all the sightings were going on. When my team was going out outside of Derry, which continues to be a hotbed, where these things were coming back to some of the farms out there. And when we got back on the scene, we found footprints in the barn, the dogs and animals wouldn't make a noise. They had a great big cornfield. It's dark. There was something making this very loud, almost asthmatic-like sound, heavy breathing sound, bipedal, running away from us, way ahead of us, making this sound. I chased it. We chased it in the dark. I recorded the sounds. Whatever it was, we couldn't catch up to it.
So I interview a guy named Jazz Shaw. He's on my show regularly. He writes for Salem Media, and he's the U they call him the UFO guy for Salem Media. He's very into the subject, and he's very connected in the UFO community. But he's talked about the fact he's 70. He said that before he was 65, he never saw anything ever. And then 5 years ago, in 1 year, he saw six UFOs. Very, very clearly, he said they were above his house. His wife saw them, different shapes. I don't know. Sometimes I actually wonder if these devices, or if you want to call them this phenomena, actually gravitates toward people that don't believe in it. I do wonder that. Any thoughts?
Again, a lot of the reports come in from people who never saw anything before. And then there's some people I know throughout their lives that they saw something 20, 30 years ago, first time they were sighted, and years and years later, they saw something again. But then it gets even more fascinating. I've been in touch with quite a lot of these people now that we're going to talk about. And some of these people I'm still in touch with today. And one person, she called me a few days ago because something was going on with her again. I probably have talked to her now for, I'm losing time, maybe 40, 45 years. She was a little girl that was missing in the area. They had a big search for her. They found her standing in the middle of a field that they had searched. She said she was there the whole time. From the time she was a little girl, she had paranormal things going on. As she grew older in time, she had UFO sightings. She had a Bigfoot encounter, but sometimes other people were with her as well. She's had all kind of strange things happen. As she got older, her children began to have experience, and now her grandchildren. I find this in many other cases as well. And interestingly, even in the last year or so, and all this strange stuff's going on, and you got to realize a lot of the reports I'm getting, I've still never even publicized it, or I wait for months in most cases before I put it out there. And there's still a lot of details I haven't released. But these people, similar backgrounds, and some of these are really educated professional people, by the way, and some live within miles of each other and they don't know each other. They don't realize that some of these other people call me about the same time or within days of each other, tell me about the increase in strange activities going on with them. And that's something that's really intriguing as well.
And you, of course, you don't tell them that you've heard for this from other places. You're just collecting information, huh?
Well, I don't go into great detail, but I may tell them very interestingly that I've heard something similar without going into any detail.
Right. I don't know. It's a strange world, Stan. Shall I assume that you're making a living at this now?
No, I don't know. I've worked in electronics field all my life. I did this basically out of my pocket. The little bit I make doesn't even cover what I'm sure the expenses I put into it every year.
I'm sure it
But
doesn't.
no, I babysit grandkids and I take UFO reports and that's about it.
I thought maybe you were maybe making some living on the lecture circuit. I mean, I know you're very popular. I know that.
Well, I am out there, but you don't make a lot of money doing this after you look at everything else you're involved in.
I'm sure you don't. Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, God bless you. I mean, I'm glad you're doing it. Somebody has to do this, and who knows? We probably won't figure this out in our lifetime. I don't know. I have no, I don't know what's going on. I'm surprised in the last 5 years that the UFO thing has just become so much more, for lack of a better term, established, because I never thought it would happen ever. So,
I have no doubt that in the months ahead, you're going to be hearing a lot more about this type of thing, what we talked about tonight. More and more researchers around the country and around the world talk about similar type of experiences. Many people in the Bigfoot field now are having these experiences. And I'll tell you about one more interesting case back in 73 when all these things were going on. In September of 73, north of Pittsburgh, you had two young ladies waiting for a friend to pick them up. They see this 7-8 foot tall, white-haired Bigfoot running across the road towards the woods. In one of his hands, it is carrying a glowing ball of light. And as this creature ran into the woods a few minutes later, this object came across the sky and projected a beam of light down into the woods where the creature ran into.
Oh, hey, Stan, that was actually something I was going to ask you, too, before we go here. Do you think that when it comes to the Bigfoot thing, do you think there's any chance that these things are, for lack of a better term, astral projections, or that they're, you know, that we perceive them as real, but they're not? If we talk about, you know, like, because I've heard the same thing you were talking about, that woman who shot at the thing, who said it went off like a light bulb flash. I've heard the same thing, that these things, there's a big flash of light and they disappear. Do you think there's any chance that maybe we're perceiving this as real, but it isn't?
Well, again, yes, there's a lot of reports of bright flashes of light and various light phenomena, luminous phenomena being reported, especially in some of these areas where you have a lot of repeat anomalous activity going on. And again, I keep an open mind. We can speculate forever, all these different theories. We just don't know. We don't know what's going on. And like I said earlier, the phenomenon is so strange it protects itself.
Yeah. Well, and you'll have to forgive me. I've been kind of pressing you to speculate because you know more about it than almost anybody else on the planet. So I would value your speculation more than mine or any others. So that's the reason. So go ahead.
If these are all illusions or hallucinations, that doesn't explain the physical evidence that turns up at times.
No, I'm not actually saying they're hallucinations. I'm saying that it's a projection done by another intelligent entity. In other words, it looks real to us, but it maybe isn't. You know what I mean? I don't know. Now I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, let me tell you, when you go out there and you see these big tracks and you're falling for a distance and they suddenly just abruptly end, there's no way you can fabricate that. And again, that was going back in the 70s, and now it's going on all over the country. I mean, if you talk to Bigfoot researchers are open-minded and will tell you what they honestly have heard. You're hearing more and more of these type of stories now coming in from all over the country.
Yeah. Yeah. Stan, thanks so much for joining us. I hope you come back someday. I really do. Love to check in with you. Say again?
Appreciate it. Your listeners want to go to my website at stangordon.info, and they can check the website out. And my books are available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, and they have a lot of very interesting information.
And we'll link all that on our blog. We'll link to Amazon for your books and your website. And you're right, your website's fascinating. I mean, it's fantastic. It's great. I read through the 2023 report today, and it's not short. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of shit in there. I mean, you know, you did a good job. So thank you.
Well, it's thanks to the witnesses that are coming forward. Without them coming forward, we would never know what's going on out there.
That's true. You're absolutely right. And also, it's good that people, I think people are more, a little less hesitant to come forward. I don't know if that's true. I don't deal with this, but it seems like this subject has become a little more, for lack of a better term, mainstream. I don't know. It does seem that way, that people are more accepting of this stuff, so.
Well, I do get a lot more reports from people, but I can tell you this, it's the only case all the time. A lot of these cases, especially the really strange reports, most people still want no publicity, and they have nothing to gain. They just want to tell me their story and see if anybody else saw something similar.
Right, right. And also, I also do wonder, too, Stan, do you think people are less hesitant to talk to you just because you're a person and you're trusting? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. You have a good reputation. You know, I think maybe people are less hesitant to talk to you than others. That would be my guess, but.
Well, a lot of people in this area, they know I've been doing this for a long time, and quite often I get referrals from, you know, people who know about what I'm doing, from relatives and friends and neighbors of people. So I do get a lot of calls in, and I deal with a lot because I do give quite a lot of lectures at different type of groups, and we generally get a really good public response. And, you know, one thing that was really interesting in the last year, as a lot of news is coming out about the government investigation of UFOs taking it more serious now. And I asked these people before I started, how many of you are you aware that the fact that government has a new agency investigating UFOs? Almost nobody knew about it.
Yeah,
almost
I know.
Nobody. I'm just amazed.
Yeah, I know that's true. I know, yeah. And not only that, it's like they change these committees and these units so often that no one can even keep track. So who knows?
Well, I think as time goes on, the door will squeak open a little more. But personally, I don't think there'll be any type of great revelation anytime in the near future.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think, too. I don't think I'll live to see it. So, I think you and I are about the same age. So I don't know. But that's my guess. But we'll see. You know, thank you for so much for coming on. Really, honest to God, it's like this was wonderful. And I hope you'll come back, too.
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm sure we'll do it again in the future.
Great. That's great. Terrific. I thank you. You take care, Stan. We'll talk to you, okay?
All right. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye. So, folks, I want to tell you, that's one of the reasons I do this. I just thought that was just terrific. This guy's been doing this forever. I mean, he is easily one of the top 5 or 6 UFO Bigfoot investigators in America. And he's been doing it for 60 years, and he's seen a lot of stuff. So, I mean, I do this show to bring you that stuff and to bring to reveal the ridiculousness of politics. I guess that's a better way to put it. You know, okay, you know, I don't try to mince any words here. This show has a conservative bent, but we're not Republicans. They say they're almost as bad as the Democrats. So, with just plenty of crap to complain about all the time. Now, the interesting thing about, you know, Stan said there toward the end, he said, you know, that more and more stuff's going to come out soon and recently, and that seems to be the case. And I mentioned this before, and I think Jazz Shaw has talked about this too before, about the fact that the people in military that we talk to about the UFO stuff say stuff's going to go down in 2028, 4 years from now. I don't know why that date. I don't know, but that's what everybody says. I don't know if there's some grand disclosure, or not disclosure, but declassification that happens. I don't know. You know, and I mean, I've told you this before, and this is really true. People say, doesn't anybody talk on the record? That's because they'll throw you in jail for 30 years. You know, all these people are under security oaths, and I forgot to ask Stan that. I was going to ask him whether he was actually under any sort of security oaths. I doubt it, because as far as I know, for you to remember his background, he has no tie to the military at all. But you'd be surprised at the people who are under security oaths. Stanton Friedman, who was, until he passed away in 2018, probably the most preeminent UFO researcher in America, and he worked as a nuclear physicist, even he was under non-disclosure security oaths. There's stuff he couldn't have talked about, which made me think that he knew stuff. I mean, we know this. I mean, Luis Alejandro constantly refers to the fact that he knows stuff he can't talk about. You know, and I think it's pretty obvious what he knows is that E.T. is here. But, he actually can't say that. So, anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens here, because I think Stan is right about that. I don't know if I'm ever going to see any sort of real disclosure in my lifetime. It'll be really interesting if that happens. But this stuff's going to happen more and more and more. More and more people are coming out with these stories, because I think there's less stigma to it now. There's people like Stan, people are trust and realize they can talk to, and they're not going to be made fun of. And on top of that, there's more cameras in the world. Everyone has one in their pocket. Although Stan brought that up too in the interview about the fact that, and this is really, you know, people say, how come there's so many bad pictures of UFOs? It is astonishing when people try to take pictures of these things, they don't work. And I, you know, it's just, you do wonder whether these devices, or whether these people, for lack of a better term, have figured out how to jam our equipment, or what it is. Yeah, honest to God, it's like opening a can of worms. I just opened it. Anyway, I hope you come back next week. We're taking Monday off. We don't do Fridays here. We do Monday through Thursday. But we're taking this coming Monday off. On Tuesday, Ed Morrissey, the editor-in-chief of HotAir.com, is here. Wednesday, Albert Rosales, the guy who's written 15 books on humanoid creatures, and we're going to talk to him about not just Bigfoot, not just the gray aliens, all sorts of stuff, ghosts, you know. And actually, Stan made, we never got around to talking about that. Stan actually, they cover ghosts with his investigative group, too. We never had a chance to talk about that. And Thursday, Mark Marcel, Bigfoot Hunter of the Year, designated by Bigfoot Times Magazine. So that's going to be our week next week. I want to thank you folks for watching. I really, really appreciate it. I love doing this, and you make this show possible. So thank you. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie, and good night to you, wherever you are. I'll see you on Tuesday. Take care.